All right, guys. Just wanted to thank you for being on the call today. I'm really excited about today's topic because it's always an interesting one. So our topic today is how to deal with a difficult borrower. And I just want to say, first off, as we're going through this training, if you set the tone of a meeting, you're not going to have someone give you too much resistance. So the biggest thing is, even if you're new to the industry, you need to set the tone of the phone call or the meeting. You are the professional there. You are the person in charge. And that has to be the tone. Just so you guys know, I mean, you're really not going to get too many people that are going to give you a hard time in this business. I think sometimes people get a little nervous in this business because, again, we are dealing with people's personal financial information. The borrower may not understand. The biggest reason why people get a little frustrated is lending, you know, since the collapse of 08, lending has changed a lot. You can't just shove a bunch of papers at a lender and a loan closes. It's not a buddy-buddy system anymore where you know a banker friend and you rub their elbows and they give you a loan. It's drastically different, and it's frustrating the borrowers because they don't understand. Many borrowers have not borrowed money since 08, so that's really the biggest frustration for them. And I'm going to give you guys some tips as we go along, but we're just going to start there. So whenever you're talking to a borrower, whether face-to-face or on the phone, you know, always just set the tone in the meeting. If someone is ever rude to you for some reason, again, maybe they don't understand, they don't want to give you financial information, they want to just scream and holler because they're frustrated with the commercial real estate lending process, you just have to tell them, ma'am, sir, you know, I apologize that you're frustrated. We're here to try to help you, but, you know, I'm going to have to end the conversation. Don't ever allow someone to beat up on you or yell or scream at you. You have to hold yourself in regards of what a lawyer would do. A lawyer would never sit there and just let someone scream at them. It would never happen, especially since no one's paying you a retainer or anything to be there with the client, the phone call. Your time is valuable. You're not going to sit there and get screamed at, which, again, is not really going to happen. But unfortunately, you do have some borrowers in this business that just don't understand how it's changed. Or maybe it's their first time borrowing. They just don't understand the commercial lending process. So if I ever do get a borrower that is extremely agitated, of course, I set the tone of the meeting right away, but I ask them, what is wrong? You know, did you just wake up on the wrong side of the bed today, or what is going on? You know, and usually they'll tell you, well, this person said this, and that person said that, and, okay, well, let me explain the commercial lending process to you. You know, you're going to tell me what's going on with your deal. I'm going to give you the terms that you're going to be facing on your deal once I hear what's going on. I do need the proper documents to shop your loan because any lender needs those documents in order to take a loan seriously or to give you any type of terms. Again, I'll be issuing you guys a SIP list, but the standard documents we need on every loan is the borrower's personal financial statement, their tri-merge credit report, again, their loan submission, which you guys, the IFPs, are going to put together, you know, income and expense reports or profit and loss reports are the same thing. They just show profit and loss. Prior 2 years and year to date, if it's a rental property, rent roll, copies of leases, those are really the main things you need to put a file together. If it's any type of loan where a renovation or construction loan or any type of bank loan, you need the borrower's bio. You want to highlight their experience. So I really just walk the borrower through the commercial process. We shop the loans to the lenders. We see which ones are interested. We're only going to shop it to lenders that, of course, can do that type of deal. We're not just going to blast it out to 100 lenders. Then from there, you know, they're going to give us an LOI, letter of intent. You know, if you're interested in one of those deals, you're going to sign it. We're going to go back to the lender. They're going to order the appraisal. You're going to pay for an appraisal. At that time, we're going to order title insurance. We'll update your property insurance. And we'll bring everything smoothly to a close. We'll get everyone on the same page. So that's just kind of the commercial lending process if you ever do need to explain that to a borrower. Third point, we already went over that, but, you know, use your time wisely, just like a lawyer and accountant would. You know, you need to get paid for your time. There's borrowers out there that think for some reason that brokers work for free. We don't. And then that's part of setting the tone for the meeting. If we're working on a contingency basis and you're not physically paying me to be here, then you're going to be paying me on a points basis or a consulting basis, and it's going to be a higher fee. You know, it just is going to be what it's going to be. We're going to appropriately price every deal, and I'll be doing that with everyone. But if a borrower wants to get weird about their fee, you really just simply have to tell them, we work on a contingency basis, ma'am or sir. You know, so if you'd like to pay us an upfront processing fee, I can clear with management. I can probably get some money knocked off at the end, but you probably don't want to pay us any type of upfront processing fee or anything, retainer, so it is what it is. Next point. We're in the lending business. You know, this isn't like door-to-door sales. We're not selling any type of weird product. We're not selling, you know, pencils or vacuums or blenders. We're not selling anything like that. So don't be too salesy with people. I've come across a lot of brokers in this business that are very salesy that tell people, oh, we can do that no matter, like they will always tell a borrower they can do their loan no matter what. And that's not the case. You have to walk the borrower through the commercial lending process and explain to them what's going to happen. And there are a lot of things that can kill deals. You know, the appraisal could come back wrong. Title insurance, there could be a major lien against their property, which they should know about. But I've been involved in deals where I just closed one actually not too long ago in Massachusetts with Andre, who's one of our IFTs. And there was a lien on this guy's property from 20 years ago that he never knew of. And we got it figured out. But there are things that can happen. So you don't have to be too salesy. Don't try to tell someone that can't be sold. If someone doesn't need a loan, they don't need a loan. There's a four-letter word we use, and it's very big in this business, next. There's a million other people out there that need loans, and we can definitely help them if they want to commit. The 10 broker commandments, I actually have an article I'm going to send out to you guys. It basically kind of just, it's an article I wrote, but it's really just kind of going over what we talked about. We also have an additional training that everyone should listen to in the portal. It's called How to Control Your Borrower. But this call is kind of focusing on that a little bit. This one is focused on how to deal with a difficult borrower. In general, though, you know, when you are a broker and in charge of someone's, one of their biggest financial decisions, you know, we're not residential mortgage brokers, but we are commercial. Someone may be buying a commercial property for a business they're going to start, refinancing. It's still a big decision because, again, we deal with small business owners. And this business typically supports their family, and the employees that they can hire, that's how they support their family. So it is a big decision for a small business owner, and you just always have to remember you're such an important part of this process in getting their loan together and getting all parties involved. Once the loan closes, you and the borrower literally are going to be friends for a lifetime. You know, every single borrower I have done a loan with, at the end we really had a bond. They understand how hard we worked. And it's just been a really great bond. A lot of our borrowers refer us new loans because they know how hard we worked. So, you know, just remember you're such an important part of the process. On the topic of controlling your borrower, throughout the loan process, and again, most of you aren't going to have to deal with this, but as you become more independent and start doing, you know, more loans on your own, if a borrower does become difficult, you know, in commercial real estate loans, there's third parties involved, like I said. There's appraisals. There's title insurance. If something goes wrong in one of those processes for some reason, sometimes the lender will require additional third-party inspections they want on the property. If they find an environmental issue, they may want some environmental reports done. So the borrower does get a little upset sometimes if these things come up on deals. You know, they have to spend more money for these third-party reports that was not addressed to them up front. But we didn't know these things were going to arise. You know, you never told me that you had, you know, a leaky gas tank at the bottom of your property. You know, you never told us that. So the thing, though, you have to tell them is you have to always say to a borrower, and this has happened to me several times on deals where the borrower's like, well, I'm not paying for that. Well, then I can just go back to the lender and tell them you're not, but the deal will be off. You know, and at that point when a borrower's starting to pay for third-party reports, they're committed. So they usually are just saying that out of frustration. At that point, they're not going to walk. They just want their deal done. But you got to explain to them what I have to every borrower who in a situation I've been in that. You got to understand the lender is lending their own money out on this property. That's their asset. They have to make sure that nothing's wrong with this property. If they're giving you a loan for however many times, however long, you got to make sure the building's still going to be standing. You know, if there's some type of weird environmental issue here going on, they have to know about it. So you got to say to the lender, you know, imagine if this was your money and you were lending out to somebody. You have to know the asset you're lending on you know, to feel comfortable about doing this loan. So it's just part of the process. Just because the lender finds an environmental doesn't mean they won't do the loan. It just depends how severe it is. I've been thankful enough, I've never been on a loan where an environmental issue has been found where the lender decided not to do it. It may have changed the structure of the loan a little bit, and the lender may have required they escrowed a little bit more money to clean certain things up. But I've never been in a situation where they've actually decided not to do the loan, thank God. All right, so on to the next topic. If a borrower, again, we are, most of your borrowers, you know, you may be originating face-to-face, which always is a good thing. Everyone knows I'm big on that. If you are just calling people through the dialer, that is okay as well. But what I would do right away is I would send them some company information. Megan Creechy. Hey guys, sorry about that. It figures. We had some office construction going on, and for some reason the power in the office just went out for a good 5 to 10 minutes. So let's just get back to where we were. I just wanted to thank everybody for staying on. Sorry about that. Okay, last thing we really talked about is, not sure where everyone heard me, but we did talk a little bit about staying in control of your borrower, staying in control of them, but also being respectful. You know, we would never curse or say anything unprofessional to a borrower. You never want to do that. You can still be firm, but of course don't overstep your boundaries. One thing I was talking about, and I think that may have been when our power went out, but always give a borrower upfront company information. You know, even if you're meeting someone face-to-face, and you may be calling them on the dialer, or maybe a referral from a friend of a friend, or however you're getting in contact with them, if everyone does not have our company information email that Trina does send out to everyone, please just email me and I will give it to you. But, you know, our company information, it's just literally three very small paragraphs that I've typed up with our rate sheet that's attached. They could see that we've been in this business for 20 years. We know what we're doing. Give that to them, you know, so they know exactly who you are. They can go on our website, look us up. That's a good way to set the tone, too, you know, looking professional right up front. We already talked about not letting a borrower yell or scream at you. You know, we are a financial institution, although borrowers sometimes tend to act a little different to brokers sometimes than they would, you know, to a banker. But, you know, for instance, a borrower would not walk into a bank and be screaming and yelling. One thing I want to mention that's not on the bullet points, too, is just be very careful with your time. You know, sometimes borrowers have a tendency, because us as brokers are very big on customer service, you know, they will call us at all times of the night. You know, if a borrower is calling you, you know, whenever your cutoff time is, if it's, you know, 5, 6 o'clock p.m., use your, you know, judgment. But if a borrower is calling you like 9, 10, 11, 12 o'clock, don't answer the phone. You know, it sets up a bad precedent. You know, we're going to be here and work for you very hard. But, you know, there no PNC Bank, no Bank of America, they're not open, you know, after 6 p.m. So just because the bank's not open doesn't mean you can call your broker that late. Now, if there's some type of emergency with your deal, I totally understand. And if you're already very, very involved with the borrower on a deal, that's fine. But definitely set your time. Don't let people step on your family time and your personal time. All right, next topic. We did say earlier, a lot of times borrowers get frustrated is just because they don't understand how lending has changed since 2008. And you really just have to explain to them, prior to 2008, there were a lot of things done in lending that aren't legal now and aren't ethical now. You had, again, the rubbing the shoulders thing to get a loan. You had, you know, mortgage brokers such as ourselves calling appraisers and telling appraisers, hey, this property needs to be appraised at this amount and we need to get this loan done, which is definitely illegal. That's a big problem we had. You know, you have appraisers out there saying properties are worth $400,000, only worth $200,000. A lender goes and lends on it at the $400,000 LTV. The borrower's making the payment. All of a sudden, the borrower finds out the property's not even worth what their mortgage payment is. That's why a lot of people threw in their keys, and that happened on residential and commercial side. So the process is much different. There's a lot more laws in effect to make sure that everything is done right. There's a lot of more paperwork required, and if a borrower keeps questioning about that, you can just explain to them. Lenders don't want 08 to happen again. We need to make sure property values are property values. We need to make sure documents are being verified and everything's being processed, because lenders don't want to make any bad loans. When a lender makes a bad loan, they lose money, and the goal of being a lender is to make money. It's not to lose money. Borrowers will sometimes say to you, well, they just want to take my property. No, they don't. Lenders are not real estate investors, not typically. So if a lender lends on the property, they want you to keep paying and then pay that mortgage off if it's a hard money loan. If it's a permanent loan, they want you to keep paying. They don't want to have to foreclose on your property and take it back because it costs them money and legal, and it's just a headache. Also, lenders put out reports. I know they're differently yearly. I think some companies do them even more than that, but they actually put out reports on how many properties they've had to take back, and they're definitely judged by that in the financial world. So the less properties a lender has to take back, the better they seem to outside investors that want to invest in their companies. So the whole point is lenders don't want to do bad loans. Next topic, if a borrower asks you, what's my rate? And borrowers will ask you that all the time. They won't give you any information about themselves. They will just ask you, what's my rate? And you have to tell them, ma'am or sir, in commercial, there's just a couple things we need to find out first before we can give you that answer, especially because we do so many different types of loans. I couldn't just tell you what your rate is by not knowing what you're looking to do. If I don't know where your tri-merge credit scores are, I don't know how much liquidity you have on hand or what other properties you own. I don't know your experience. There's certain things I need to find out in order for me to give you an estimate of what your rate and terms would be. So please keep that in mind, guys. Borrowers will ask you all the time, what's my rate? What's my rate? What's my rate? And you just have to say to them, you know, ma'am, sir, we do all different types of loans, so I need to get some information from you first in order to tell you what your rate would be. Just to kind of go over, if someone's really looking for a bank loan, you know, if someone's looking for a bank loan, they're looking somewhere between 5 to 6%, a 20-year AM. If someone's looking for an SBA loan, which is also a bank loan, they're looking somewhere in high fives, more like 6.25 at the 25-year AM, and there's different fixed options available. In commercial, our fixed options are always 3, 5, 7, 10-year fixed. If someone's looking for a stated bank alternate loan, they're looking at an 8 to 10%, and it's a 30-year AM. It's a principal and interest-only payment since it's permanent financing. Anything permanent financing will be principal and interest. Stated, again, same fixed terms, 3, 5, 7, 10. We do work with one stated lender that will do a full 25. It's a 25-year AM, and it's 25 years fully fixed. Now, they're always at a 10% because they're lending out money for the next 25 years at the same interest rate. But they're in commercial, in the bank alternate world, the stated world that we call it, you can get a 25-year fully fixed loan, but it's obviously going to come at a much higher interest rate because, again, you're asking the lender to lend out money for 25 years at the same interest rate. So those are your rates on the permanent side. On the temporary side, again, most of the loans that we're dealing with are going to be under $1 million. So if someone's looking for a hard money rehab loan or a hard money bridge loan, they're looking at a 12% interest-only loan for 12 to 24 months. It's probably going to be more like 24 months. It's probably going to be more like 12 months is what I meant to say. So we can get stretched out to 24, but most lenders like to stay at that 12 months. On construction, they're really looking at the same thing, too. It's under $1 million, 12% interest-only loan, 12 to 24 months. Of course, hard money loans come with points as well. So if people do ask you, what's my rate, you can say what I just said. You know, we need some information from you first. I need to know what you're doing. But in general, those are the general rates out there. If you want to compare over 100 lenders that we work with, that I work with every day, those are the rates out there right now. If a borrower asks you, why do you need my personal documentation, what do you say? Well, There's several reasons. I know we went over that, but we can go over it again. Obviously, we need the loan submission because we need to know what they're going to do, and you guys can help the borrower fill that out. Tri-merge credit report. We need your tri-merge credit report because all lenders, whether they're hard money lenders or permanent financing lenders, all of them have FICO requirements. So if we don't know what your where your scores fall, we would just be shooting your loan out to lenders that may not even be able to do it. We're just, in essence, wasting time. And time is money in this business, especially since we're working on a contingency basis. So there's no way you can ever do a loan without a tri-merge credit report. If there's a borrower that ever says to you, oh, well, you know, I did a loan before and the lender didn't need my tri-merge, they're either making it up or they've somehow borrowed money since prior to 08 and something crazy went down. Or maybe they did a deal with a friend or a buddy that became their lender. They're not an actual lending institution. Hard money lenders, yes, hard money lenders ask for tri-merge credit reports. All lenders do. If you do get in contact with other commercial mortgage brokers in this business as well, some of them think for some reason that lenders don't need tri-merge credit reports. That's absolutely not true. It's just not true. Even hard money lenders do. So we always need to try merge because we need to know where your scores are because all lenders have FICO requirements. And we need to make sure we're placing the loan with the correct lender that can do your file. So, ma'am, sir, we don't want to waste your time. We want to make sure we're sending it to the correct lender that can do it. We need your personal financial statement because we need to know how much cash you have on hand. All lenders have post-closing liquidity requirements. Some are more lenient than others, but almost all of them have some type of post-closing liquidity requirement. And that means they want the borrower to have a certain amount of months of mortgage payments on hand before they will agree to close the loan. So, for instance, if it's a bank deal, the bank's going to want that borrower to have 6 months of mortgage payments on hand, and that's always the case with bank loans. There's no way getting around that. Not being said, banks can do whatever they want, but that is their rule of thumb, and I've been in that situation several times. You know, if the borrower does not have 6 months of mortgage payments on hand at least, the bank's not going to do the deal. Our stated lenders are the most lenient with the post-closing liquidity. Some of them will only require like 1 to 2 months. Sometimes, I know it sounds crazy, they actually do run some certain special promos. This month, we're not checking post-closing liquidity requirements. Some months they don't. I guess it really just depends how many deals they've done that month, how many more deals they want to bring in. So those are lenders that are always the most lenient with that. Hard money lenders, so rehab, bridge, and construction lenders, are very, very crazy about that. Again, if the borrower doesn't typically have 6 months of payments on hand, we'd really like to see that in a checking account, just so everyone knows. Savings account is also okay, but if those mortgage payments, those 6 months I'm talking about, are like in a 401k or an IRA, some lenders may count that as being post-closing liquidity, but most will not because that's not money you can easily access. There's a process that's going to, you know, the borrower is going to have to take to get that money out of the 401k or the IRA. So just so you know, you also may be asked that question. Lenders want to see those 6 months of mortgage payments on hand. And 6 months is really the standard, guys, for almost every single lender. And again, hard money lenders are very crazy about that because these are riskier loans. You know, you're buying a property, you're rehabbing it, it's not producing income, nobody's in it. You know, if something goes wrong, a contractor just quits, you know, construction gets thrown off and is not on course, what are you guys going to do to float the mortgage payments you need to pay us every single month? So those lenders are very, very crazy with that. So in general, that was kind of a long explanation, but that's why we need certain documentation, because if I don't have your tri-merge, your personal financial statement, there's no point to even talk to the borrower. You know, we wouldn't even know where to place your loan, because we need to make sure we're sending it to right lenders, and we need to make sure we know what we're doing. Also, if it's a loan where, for some reason, the borrower is going to max out the LTV, we need to know that they can pay us. You know, especially considering we're working on a contingency basis, if they need to refinance and they're maxing out their LTV at a 65% or 70%, whatever the lender is going to give them, that means that they're maxing out the LTV. That means some of the third-party closing costs, you know, meaning their lender fee, their broker fee, their title insurance, can be included in the loan. That means they need to come to the table with that money. Well, if they only have $100 on hand, how are we getting paid? So we need to know those things. Obviously, you know, underwriting needs to do their thing and make sure all the numbers work on the loan. That's why we need their income expense reports, their current year-to-date, their past 2 years. If it's a bank loan, it's going to be the past 3 years, and, of course, their corporate and personal tax returns. And then one other big document that we always need that isn't really a personal document, but just their professional resume or bio. If it's a bank deal, we always need that. Banks always want to know who is this individual. If it's a rehab or bridge or construction loan, they're also very big because that personal bio or resume should highlight their real estate experience. A lot of times you'll ask a borrower for their personal bio or resume, and they'll just send you a regular resume. Like they were a manager of a grocery store for this many years, but they're trying to do a real estate deal. So you're going to have to pick up the phone. Well, in your case, if you're an IFP, I'm going to pick up the phone. But as you progress in this profession, you may be talking to them as well. You just need to tell them, I need a resume that highlights your real estate experience. And I can send an example of that. We actually have a blank template here that we send to borrowers, and they can fill out if they don't have their own. But that's something that's going to teach you going to gauge you on what real estate investors are more experienced than others. Real estate investors that really have it together and experience always have their own bio. They know the documents that are going to be requested of them. They know the general terms. They're still going to ask you the questions, just to see what you say, but they know what's going on. So that's really how we're going to answer why they need your personal documentation. How many points are you charging me? That's a great question. I typically always tell borrowers, you know, we like to make $10,000 per file, but, you know, we really do need to look at a file and size it up before we can really determine how hard is this going to be to get done. Definitely come to me if anyone asks you a question on that, but you can tell them we do like to make 10 grand per file. If it's a very small deal, it doesn't mean we're not going to do it. It doesn't mean we always have to make 10 grand per file. We definitely are always going to charge 2 to 3 points per loan, just so everyone knows. But it does depend on the loan size. So that's why I kind of gave you guys the $10,000 range, because, you know, if you're dealing with a $1 million loan, 3 points would be $30,000. You know, so on a $1 million loan, you know, I would, if it's a really clean deal, I would be happy to do it for 1, 1.5 points. You know, it doesn't have to be 3 points, but typically, because we're dealing with smaller balance stuff that's going to be under $1 million, it's always going to be 2 to 3 points. It can be 5 points, but in general, we like to make 10 grand per file because we work very, very hard to get our commercial loans done. We work on a contingency basis, and we're going to make sure it gets done. If a borrower asks you, can you guarantee me my loan will close? What do you say? That's a question that you, when you answer that, it just comes with experience. When you're looking at a file and looking at documents, first of all, if a borrower has not sent you any of their documents, there's no way you can guarantee the loan is going to close. You have nothing on them. So everything you're talking about with them is just kind of a figment of someone's imagination. If you don't have their tri-merge, you know, they say they have a property, it's not fully leased, you know, we don't have their leases, you don't have proof that's fully leased out, you can't guarantee anything. Now, once you get some of their documents and start looking through the file, you can say certain things like, I'm working on a 4-unit deal now. Borrower has decent FICO. He is concerned his loan's going to close. His LTV works out. You know, there's things I always mention to borrowers where, hey, you have a 4-unit, the property's fully rented out, plus your FICO is great. Your property's worth $900,000, you only have a $400,000 payoff, that's also great because he wants cash out, and I know he's going to get caps probably around a 65% LTV. The LTV works out here. So do I know, can I predict that the appraisal is going to come back perfectly 100%? Can I predict that there's not going to be any problems with title? No. But there are good things I'm seeing in this loan that make me feel confident about it and are making me want to work on the loan. So what I typically do when someone asks me, can you guarantee my loan will close, I give them the good things I see about their loan. If there's any bad things about their, just things that make lenders a little scary, like, for instance, on this loan I'm working on, it's a 4-unit. The husband transferred the property to his wife in April, March of this year. So I'm getting a copy of that transfer deed to see how much it was transferred for, but I'm going to bet it was probably transferred for $1 or nothing. We had a training call about that last week where that does become a problem sometimes. So I made him aware of the 3 things I really like on the loan. I made him aware of the 1 thing I don't like on the loan, or 1 thing that I should say may become a problem. But you just want to highlight the good things, always point out the bad things, and then just really go through the process with him, you know. Next question, what will my closing cost be? You guys can direct that question to me. And when you start closing a couple of loans, you're going to figure out what their closing costs are going to be. But in general, on every transaction, a borrower's closing costs are going to be, they're going to have a lender fee. They're going to have a brokerage fee, of course, if they're working with us, a brokerage company. And they're going to have a title insurance fee. They're also going to have an upfront appraisal fee, but an appraisal can never be included in the closing cost. That's always a fee that's paid up front. So make that aware to them. Most borrowers know that. Prior to 08, though, guys, some lenders did include appraisals in closing costs. They don't do that anymore. No lender does that anymore. So it just doesn't work like that. But their closing costs are always going to be broker fee, lender fee, title insurance. Lender, it just really depends on the lender because we do so many different types of deals. Banks typically have heavy fees because they're banks. then they'd have a brokerage fee. And title insurance is really based, actually, title insurance is based on their loan amount. So we can definitely get them a quote, but title insurance, you know, for your average commercial deal is going to run the bar somewhere around $4,000. So any question you get like that, you can direct to me. It really just depends on what type of deal it is. Their closing costs are going to be different if it's a bank loan, if it's a stated loan, or if it's hard money loan. They're going to be different because they're different types of loans. But you can tell the bar your closing costs are going to be your appraisal you're going to pay up front. You're going to have a lender fee, a broker fee, and title insurance. You know, if it's a property where there may be some environmental issue, they may have to pay for an environmental or a survey. But most properties we're going to touch are not going to be that type of property. So I just wanted to open up to any questions. Does anyone wanted to ask anything about dealing with a difficult borrower? Sorry, you're unmuted. If anyone has any questions about dealing with a difficult borrower, and I just want to thank everyone for sharing the work out to this world. Go ahead.
Megan, I have a question. It's not about dealing with a borrower, but it is about the portal. Where is it? I'm very, very new. I don't know where it is.
What portal?
The portal where we can, I think you mentioned something about looking at another training. Maybe it was about stated. I'm not sure. I've been doing so many of the classes now. But Chris also mentioned in the origination training that I did yesterday that there is a stated training on the portal. What exactly is the portal that everyone has access to?
Okay, so we have to redo a lot of these training classes, just so you know. Trina has a Dropbox that she sends to you guys. You guys can listen to the classes.
Uh-huh.
They used to be in a portal, more like something where you'd have, you know, have your own login. So basically, to answer your question, there is no portal right now. We just send you the classes. There was a couple
okay.
of things we kind of – actually, I'm going to bring the portal back to host the portal. Cost us a couple $1,000 a month just to host that website, and there's a lot of other stuff we have to pay on the back end to be able to host all these virtual trainings, if they're
okay.
voice or video. We're going to bring that back. It is saving the company a little bit of money not paying for that, so that's why Trina's been sending you guys the training through Dropbox.
Okay.
But, and one thing that was kind of an issue when we did the portal was a lot of times the IPs would forget their username and password. And when you set your username and password, I can't uncover it. It's just a security feature.
Okay.
So then they would have to go back through this whole process to find the username and password. So we're going to put the portal back up, guys, just so you can log in with your username and password. Just try to save it, please, in a safe area because me
okay.
or Trina will not be able to recover it. You will have to just email the company that we use for hosting, and they'll have to give you your username and password. But, yeah.
Okay.
Don't worry about the portal, and we apologize. A lot of these trainings we are redoing, they're a little over a year old when we have this portal system. There's no team leaders, just so you know. There's no team leaders anymore. If you have a commercial real estate loan, you're going to come to me. If you have a business loan, you're going to go to TJ. And if it's anything about capital raise, you're going to go to Chris. But if anyone has any questions about who to go to, everyone should have my email. You can just come right to me, and I'll handle it.
Okay, I don't have your email. The only email I have is Trina's. I don't have Chris's either.
Okay, I can give it to you. Do you want me to give it to you right now?
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, I unplugged my earphones for a minute. Last word I said is I don't have your email or Chris's. I just have Trina's.
That's fine. I can give you my email. Do you want me to just email it to you, or do you
yeah.
want me to? Let me just send everyone the phone, too, just so they have it. Everyone
okay.
should have my email, and I will have Trina put that in the welcome packet. But
okay.
My email is just mkracy. It's mkrache at 11capitalfinance.com.
Okay.
And just again, it's mk. RACHE at 11capitalfinance.com. I also want to give everyone my work cell phone number. Call me, text me anytime something's going on. It's 215-350-7729. So again, my 3 cents is 215-350-7729. So
okay.
If you're ever working on a deal, you need our help, you need us to contact someone, just shoot me a text. Give me a little background information. This is the bar. This is what's going on. Can you please reach out if you know something's going on? Maybe you're in an emergency situation or something.
Okay.
Okay. So, yeah,
thank
we're rebranding and doing all of that. Actually, just so everyone knows, we're turning all these trainings actually into live videos as well. So,
oh, good.
Yeah, so I got hooked up with a professional filming studio. It is costing us a good bit of money, but I'm a very visual person, and I like to I like to see things, you know, in video. I don't know how
yeah.
anyone else do, but
I do too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you guys, when you do log into the portal to see the videos, you do you can just listen to them. You don't have to watch it the whole time, you know.
Okay.
Yeah.
So with me, when I go into Dropbox, maybe because I just started, there's very little in there. I have week one, and week two, and then the test for week one, and that's it. So some of these videos are some of these trainings he's talking about, I actually don't have access to, like the stated training, and he mentioned another one.
There's 25 trainings in the portal. So how Trina has it set up is if you do the first two, you take the test, she allows you to go on to week two. So then you take
okay.
week two and week two, do the test, she's automatically going to send you two more. So the
okay.
reason we just do it like that is just to put it in sections. So if
yes.
you're new to the business, we can kind of get you briefly understanding origination, qualifying people. You know, there is a whole new lingo that comes along with this business. You know,
yes.
you do have the origination guide. Definitely
yes.
look through it and definitely study, but you're going to definitely learn the lingo as, you
know. Yes.
As you get on these training calls, you hear me talking
yes.
about LTVs, this and that, tri-merge credit reports, personal financial statements,
yes.
why we need these things. So that's why I always tell people, you learn this business by doing.
Yes.
Those beginning ones she's given you, just so you know, are just really to start you off on the right track, because if we just give you the 25 classes, there are some classes that are very advanced, and if you listen to that first, it's not going to help you progress into the industry.
Right, right. I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Megan?
So that makes sense.
Yeah, guys, does anyone have any questions about, like, the training today or just anything you guys want to throw at me in general? Because a lot of times what we do on these calls, if anybody is not in a deal, someone's confusing you, you know, you feel like you're being led astray, just throw it out there.
Megan?
Yes.
And a question for you. On
go ahead.
The closing costs.
Yes.
You mentioned that in a commercial loan, we can only finance, all of them must be paid out of pocket, correct?
Hold on 1 second. I'm going to take my office phone off the speaker. Can you say that again?
On the commercial loans,
yeah.
The closing costs, you stated they cannot be financed, but they must be paid up front, cash.
They can be financed into the loan if the borrower does not surpass their LTV that the lender assigns them. So
the loan-to-value comes into the picture as to whether we will or not finance it, correct?
I'm sorry. I'm having a hard time hearing you. Can you ask me that again?
The loan-to-value
yes.
comes into the picture
uh-huh.
in the request to finance the cost. If it's too high, lender's going to say no. I understand that. The main question that I have, and I understand that concept. Thank you. The main question
yeah.
I have is how soon do we provide them with an estimate, good faith estimate of cost to the owner?
An estimate of closing cost to the borrower?
Correct.
Usually it's the borrower asks. I mean, right away, you know, as you're getting a file and you're starting to get documents in, as you become more comfortable with the file and exactly what's coming on, it's really when you can give them a good estimate of cost. Really how I do it is once I place the loan with the lender that says they want to do the loan, I give them an estimate of their closing costs right away because they're going to get a letter of intent from the lender, and a lot of their closing costs are going to be listed right on that letter of intent. So uh-huh. I have that conversation before I deliver that to them because I don't want them to be shocked. You know, this business, so a lot of this business is being proactive, you know?
So it's not like in a residential loan where we must, within 3 days of application, provide a good faith estimate, correct?
No.
In a commercial loan, that's going to be totally different.
We don't ever have to hit them with it until they're at closing, to be honest with you. There's no law like that in commercial.
Literally.
But if you want to close a loan and make sure the borrower's on the same page and they feel comfortable and you're holding their hand throughout the whole process, yes, definitely need to have that conversation. Go ahead.
What we're looking for in this case then is once an application is submitted with some of the documentation based upon what he's requesting, you need to analyze what it is that we have and to whom we can take it that may be a proper candidate to deliver the funds to the customer, and therefore at this point we're not able to even determine whether number one can do the loan, let alone provide them with any cost estimates. So we need to structure the loan first.
We need to structure the loan first, but if I talk to a borrower on the phone, or if you guys just hand me those three documents, again, the loan submission, trimers, and personal financial statement, I can basically break down to a borrower what their closing costs are going to be. You know, if I know they're going for a rehab loan and it's under $1 million, like I said, I can tell them right away you're looking at a 12% interest-only loan, one-year loan. If it's a resident, say it's a 1-4 unit property, I know their appraisal, even if it's a 1-4 unit, but still investment, their appraisal is going to cost them around $500. That's where a residential appraisal is. Now, if it's a commercial property, so 5+ units or any other property, commercial appraisals, unfortunately, are a lot different than commercial. That's going to cost them around $3,000, give or take. Sometimes it's less. Sometimes it's a lot more. I'm doing a chiropractor office right now in the state of Oregon, and his commercial appraisal is about $4,500.
Yeah, it's so depending on the type of property.
It depends on the type of property. And it also depends on the area, too, and where it's located. This is kind of like in the middle of nowhere, Oregon, so I'm really surprised this loan's even getting done. It's a very small town. There was not many appraisers. The lender, Assets Capital, actually, that we spoke to this past Tuesday. Yeah, I think today's Thursday. I'm losing my days. They got 3 bids on it, and that was the lowest quote. So that's just it is what it is on that. But, again, if they were doing a rehab loan, I could tell them 12% interest-only loan. You know, we're going to be charging 2 points. I can obviously quickly determine what their loan amount is. On any hard money loan, the lender is going to charge at least 2 points as well. I can tell them what their appraisal cost is going to be around if I know the property type, of course. I can give them an estimate of the lender's points, of our points. And title insurance is a third party, but most title insurance on most deals, title insurance is based off of the loan amount, whether it's a purchase or refinance. I always see title insurance being around $4,000 or $5,000. Just our average loan size is $400,000 here, so it always ends up being $4,000 or $5,000. But if anyone also has any title questions at all, what I'm probably going to do is set up a training call. We work with Chicago Title, who's a national direct underwriting title office.
Direct.
They do residential and commercial nationwide. I love them. We do work with First American as well. But we can do training calls with them. But title insurance, for anyone that's newer to the business, is something that's regulated from state to state. Most states are regulated where really the fees should be the same thing. There are some free agency states, you know. But I can send everyone information about that. But to answer your question, I mean, I can really give them a breakdown of their closing costs right on the phone when I'm talking to them.
Got it.
I can do that
up
front.
Typically, if I do a submission to you on a commercial loan request,
uh-huh.
You review the file, you're comfortable, it's doable. Is it safe for me to assume that you will contact the customer, give him an overview of what it is that we can do, deliver, so forth? Is there a time frame that I should explain to the borrower a protocol of processing?
Good question. So before I ever contact one of your borrowers, so say one of the IPs gets me a loan submission, a tri-merge credit report, and personal financial statement, remember the personal financial statement and tri-merge credit report is coming from the borrower. So it's not anything you guys need to do. You just need to ask them for the
document. And that may take time.
What?
And that may take time.
It may take time, but if someone is very, if someone is motivated to get a loan done,
motivated.
Yeah, they should be able to give them to you in a pretty timely fashion. I mean, it's only two documents, you know.
Understood.
Again, we can help them put the loan submission together if they need that help. And I just want you guys to know there are so many times I have done loan submissions for borrowers. I'll send you guys some examples of loan submissions I've done that were very extensive. I have to call a borrower today after we get off the phone, and I'm in the trenches with everyone doing what you guys do every day. So there's a lot of times I have to put loan submissions together for borrowers, but if it gets the deal done, just do it. You know, just ask them the questions. But so just so you guys know, if you send me those documents, I know what's going on. I'm always going to contact you before I call the borrower, just so you know. Just so you know that I'm going to contact the borrower. But our turnaround time is really, really quick. I always tell people 24 hours, but it never, ever takes me more than a couple hours once I get those things from you to give a borrower a call. I know a lot of us are on different time zones, so our office is open here from 9 to 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If someone has a crazy emergency, I don't mind talking to them on the after time. You just have to be careful not to let this business control your life, you know, because people will call you like 12 times a night.
So when I let the borrower know that you're going to be calling him, how do I refer your title from our company to him? You would be an underwriter or what?
You could just tell them, you can tell them, you know, our underwriter, our processor is going to be contacting you. I mean, you can tell them I'm one of the principals of the company. I am, you know, so it, whatever you want to call me, honestly, we're all a team here. It doesn't really matter to me. What I always do is when I go to call a borrower, I always let the IAP know, because if they want to be on the phone, it's a good phone call that we can all have, you know, so, Andre, who's on the call, Roberta, you're on the call. We've done calls together with borrowers. We've got on lender calls together. Any time you guys can be on the call with me and the borrower and the lender we jump on the call with or whatever, you're always encouraged to please be involved in the process as much as possible. You're always going to be copied on emails. But I always do encourage everyone to do that just so you know exactly what's going on. Right on the phone, we're going to address all their issues. I'm going to tell them how they need to structure the deal right then and there. Right after that, if they want to move forward, I just issue them a full stip list. I've never had a borrower tell me they don't want to move forward, just so you know. Sometimes we may get on the phone with a borrower, and I may tell them, here's the terms you're facing, here's the situation you're in, here is an estimate of your closing costs, and they may say, oh, my God, that's too much. I don't think I can do this right now. Okay, you know, well, then, you know, when they feel prepared to, that they do want to afford this and they do want to go buy a property, then we can have the conversation again. But
I
no
know
one
you
does...
can close a million. I know you can close a million. You're such a sharp little cookie.
Yeah, no, we close a lot of people, but I think the key to success in this business is, like I said in the call, not being too salesy, but being realistic with people. Here's what your closing costs are going
to
be.
We need to earn the trust of the individual that we're going to do right by him. And Megan can sit on the back end, and boom, done.
Yes, we want to tell them exactly what they're going to – most borrowers you guys are going to deal with, honestly, are probably going to be experienced. They have borrowed some money at some point, or if they already own commercial property, they need to refinance. So, yeah, they understand the process. But, you know, sometimes you do have a newer borrower, and you just want to let them know, here's the process, here's what's going to happen, here's how we're going to structure your loan, here's how it needs to get done. They're going to feel taken care of. They're going to feel very good when they get off the phone conversation. And they're going to know that someone can close their loan and get it done.
Hey, before we move on here, too, I think just so you know, as far as getting on the calls with Megan and listening in, I mean, that's such a great way to learn the business. You'll learn way more listening in on calls than you ever will looking at stuff and paperwork and doing studying. So really make a point to be on those calls because they're really valuable.
Thank you, Megan.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Andre.
Yeah, no worries. You've taught me a ton. That's how you learn it, is by doing it. So
I think actually when me and you first started dealing with David Biter, I mean, David wasn't really a hard borrower to deal with, but there were definitely times in that loan that, you know, that me and Andre closed a deal a couple of months ago with a gentleman named David Biter, and I don't know if he was from New York, but he had a very thick New York accent.
New York, oh, my God.
He was really, really cool, but there was times of the loan where he was getting a little frustrated.
New Yorkers are pushy.
Call. Yeah, he was actually he was pushy in our initial call, but I just kind of slowed him down and told him, look, this is what you got to do. Because a lot of times borrowers would be like, well, I'm going to go to my bank. And as I'm talking to him, he had tax liens, he had IRS issues, like he had every single problem under the book. And I was like, dude, you are not going to a bank. Like, good luck, you can do that, but it's going to waste your time.
Problems. It was a great loan to learn on, though.
It was a great loan to learn on, and then throughout the loan, he had a mortgage on his property that was like over 20 years old. This was the one I was talking about, that no one knew about until title insurance came up. And I actually taught Andre, you know, this is what we do here. We don't let deals sit. I was the one who called the title companies and the attorneys involved on the transaction because all of them didn't know how to figure it out either. There's a lot of times, guys, I'm in the trenches when we're at the end of the deal, and the lender is not going to close your deal. And, Andre, you saw that with Apex?
Was Apex
calling any of the lawyers or attorneys to figure out the title issues?
Nope. They were like, we'll figure it out. It should take 2 weeks, maybe 3 weeks. We'll let you know. We had no urgency.
I was like, we're not waiting 3 weeks. We need to close this loan. Everyone needs to get paid. You know, so, no, the lender is not going to do that. Lenders, unfortunately, don't do that these days, guys. They used to. Back in the day, they would jump in and figure that all out. But they would have that deal still would have never closed if I wouldn't have called the borrower and had him dig up all the paperwork I needed him to dig up. I got every single attorney involved in that transaction that was involved. I got the title companies involved. You know, we just kept going through document after document after document until we got them what they needed.
In the East Coast, we use closing attorneys. In the West Coast, we use escrow companies. Am I correct?
Well, I mean, throughout the whole entire country, you know, title insurance is done by a title company, you know, but
I'm talking about the closing of the transaction. Do we use closing attorneys or not? Or escrow companies?
It depends on the state. So some states, actually Massachusetts, which was where this guy was involved in, some states require that an attorney has to close the deal.
A closing attorney, correct.
Yeah, there has to be a closing attorney. Most states are not like that. Most states, it's just the title insurance company has to close the deal. And most title companies have a lawyer on hand anyways. But some states, there's not many of them. I don't know, there's like 7 to 12 of them require that an attorney must close the deal. And, you know, those are just, you just have to hope you have an attorney that doesn't have their own agenda. You know, and we'll pay attention and stuff. If they don't pay attention, I will call them a million times until they pay attention, and they're just going to close it just so I stop calling them. So. That's what we had to do with David Biter, the attorney that was involved. Just, you know, he was busy, but we had a deal to close. So I got him all the documents he needed, and we got it closed. So I can send you a website that will show you what states, and you guys can send this to your borrowers too, will show you what states we use title companies and what states actually attorneys have to be done to do title.
Perfect.
So also, guys, just to give you a heads up, if you are in a state where an attorney needs to, where a borrower needs to use an attorney to close, you want the borrower to find their own closing escrow attorney, if they can. They should be able to do that. The reason is because if we refer a lawyer to them and say that lawyer doesn't do a good job for some reason, again, a lawyer is just an independent contractor just like we are, you know, so we're accountants. We don't want that really to come back on us. You know, we were trying to help them. Maybe we Googled something on the internet and found them an escrow attorney, a lawyer that could close their deal. We'd rather have the borrower Google some stuff, look online, ask some friends and family. They should be aware that they're in a state where they need an attorney, and the lender will tell them as well. A lot of times the lender that we're working with will refer them attorney. So that's great. We just want to make sure we don't refer them someone that's not going to do a good job because that may make 11 Capital look bad.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Okay, so I have a question.
Go ahead.
It's a simple one. I know we're using the term Drexel Brothers and the term 11 Capital Finance. When we're talking to customers or marketing this business, should we be using both? I know in the signature that I've been getting from Trina, it always says 11 Capital Finance, but I know you guys have two companies going here, Drexel Brothers and 11 capital plan. So which is appropriate? And as far as business cards, which name goes on the business card?
So we're just using 11 Capital Finance, just so you know.
Okay.
My email signature is 11 Capital, so is Trina. Your email that's been set up for you is 11 Capital.
Okay.
Drexel Brothers has nothing to do with 11 Capital.
Okay.
Drexel Brothers was just turned into a holding company.
Okay.
So, yeah, me and Chris started Drexel Brothers 3 years ago, and what we did at Drexel Brothers is the same exact thing we did here, but Drexel Brothers actually owns interests in other companies and stuff, and it was just becoming too convoluted.
Okay.
So just for a separation of church and state, 2-3 months ago, I created a separate division just to do loans through, and that's 11 Capital Finance. And that was really just to break off a new entity. You know, me and Chris have always done the same thing. But, yeah, if you're talking to a borrower, you're perfectly right. You don't want to keep throwing different company names at them. We're just 11 Capital Finance. That's it. You know?
Okay.
And you'll see in the company information that I have, the three little paragraphs, the way I address that. You know, the principals of this company have been doing this for 20 years. You know,
yes.
I don't go through multiple company names. You know, that's just what happens. People progress in a business. They change their company name. Maybe we partnered with somebody. We decided not to partner with them anymore. We go and form our own company. This business will always be our internal team and me, Trina, and Chris, and Anthony running this company.
Okay, I understand that. And I know in the trainings that I listened to that Chris did, he continuously used Drexel Brothers.
Yeah, and again, I apologize for that. We're redoing all of the trainings.
Okay.
We're redoing all of them with video and new voice. So all of that Drexel Brothers stuff is going to be out there. The reason we have kept them, though, is just because all the information is still relevant. The information there is gold, and it's all the same stuff. But I am rebranding all of those, and I just every week I'm doing it. I just haven't gotten around to doing all 25 classes. But in the next couple of weeks, we should have all this stuff rebranded. So I apologize for the confusion.
That's okay. But it didn't confuse me because I did research on both of them. So I knew what was going on. I just didn't know which was appropriate to use. Because I know also you had another program that isn't called the AIP. It's called the LM something. Or
it was LPM.
And he kept using that, and I'm like, okay, they really mean AIP.
IAP.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that was what we used to, with Drexel Brothers, we called the loan reps LPMs. It's the same exact thing. We just changed the name to IAP again just so it wasn't the same thing. But that's all going to be rebranded, so don't worry about that. And believe me, a lot of people have been asking us that.
Okay. All right. Well, now I got it straight. I know what to do with the business cards and what business name to use and everything. So that's great.
Yeah. And Trina, we actually have a template for business cards for anybody who wants to order business cards.
Okay.
So
you
can email Trina for that template. And I'm not sure if anyone interacts with our CTO. Our CTO's name is Anthony Viviani. He's the one who sets up our website, our apps. Your email addresses, he makes sure the website keeps functioning and everything. He creates all of, like, our technology and a lot of our media and stuff. He does a lot of graphic design and stuff. So, but Trina has the template. She can send it to you, and you can order them online for, like, $10.
Okay. Now, as far as the business part, I believe it's something that you send through an email. Do you guys have any information on that?
I'm sorry.
It's a business card that Chris talked about. I kind of understand the concept that when a person opens up their email, it's in there. Somewhere on there, if they click, it will open up your website or information.
That's called a V card.
Yeah, V card.
So, again, those are all part of the old trainings. They all need to redone. If you want a V card, I can get you one, but they're expensive.
I don't want it if it's expensive.
Exactly. So it's a virtual business card. You know what someone does, and we have a company that we work with. We were doing it with our old IAPs. We had them get V cards if they wanted them. It wasn't required, but you can own a number. You can own a set of five numbers. Like, I think mine's 75757. So any combination of five numbers, guys, you can actually own. There's a technology called V-Card, And if someone texts a word like lending, like I picked the word lending, to that set of numbers, it will send back your contact information and website to them. So as you're out at networking events and maybe you forget a card or you're just being very futuristic and you're like, I don't do business cards anymore, I do the V card thing, which stands for virtual